tribulation.
Pardon me?
No, they are not going back. Not going back, but I'm looking for an opon.
We consider it an opon. We start with English and then we'll work our way up.
By that time, my three-year-old granddaughter.
Two little people.
By that time, my three-year-old granddaughter was four, and you know I can't talk to her now, so I'm hoping to get to the level of her three-year-old. That's absolutely four. I won't be able to talk to her again either.
Our speaker's here and ready.
Ready?
Our speaker's ready.
Good morning. Whenever you're ready, it's fine.
I think we're ready.
Okay. So we're starting on thoughts on my community this morning. And as I said on Sunday, I don't want this to be what Rabbi Riskin once called toothbrush politics is as follows. You don't have your own toothbrush, so you borrow a toothbrush from someone else. Did anyone in their right mind around this table ever do that? I'm assuming not. Right? We're talking about normal people around this table, so I'm assuming not. Right? In other words, I am not going to sit here and tell you how come we're different from the Haredim and how come they're wrong and how dare they say this about us. I don't want to talk apologetics. I want to bring thoughts about our own community, the way I understand it, the way I see it, the way I feel it, and therefore you have to be ready to hear what I would call as self-gratification, how great we are, and you got to be ready to hear how terrible we are as well. I'm going to say at the outset, I don't think that the so-called modern Orthodox community, that I think I'm part of, has solved all the problems. And we have our own challenges, we have our own problems, you probably can think of them right now as I'm talking. If there's been a community out there that on the one hand is devoted to Torah and mitzvot, but on the other hand has solved all the problems, I have not yet found such a community. So, I just want to say as a word of introduction, A, we're going to talk about our community without apologetics, and B, be prepared, you're not going to like everything you're going to hear. Rabbi, may I start? Great. The modern Orthodox community, as it's called, obviously conjures up the image of something different. Namely, there was once upon a time an Orthodox community, and somehow we evolved and developed and changed it to a modern Orthodox community. In other words, there used to be one way, and now there's a new way. And if you look around, quite frankly, we don't live like they lived 200 years ago. The so-called Orthodox community of 200 years ago didn't dress the way we do. They didn't speak in the same language we do right now. Obviously, their whole lifestyle was different. I am sure that on Shabbos, their rabbi didn't get up and say, "Oh, you got to be very careful with the internet, there's pornography and other such things on the internet." That when there were community meetings and there was politics and controversies, it wasn't done on the email, it wasn't done on the blog, it was done another way. So obviously, when you talk about our community, the first thing that comes up is, are we different or are we the same? Are we continuing the line of tradition that's always been? Or did we develop something totally new? So, what do you think? What do you think? Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that the rabbis I know that the rabbis from 40, 50 years ago, instead of ranting and raving about the internet, they ranted and raved about TV. 100 years ago, they probably ranted and raved about radio. And 200 years ago, they probably ranted and raved about books. There's no point. They complain about that. And discussions are just... People used to get together and instead of going on a blog or email, they'd get together and complain. So really, nothing's changed. Just the methods have changed. Nothing's really changed.
Okay.
You know, this community is very diverse. I think you have to define what that is exactly.
I'm not going to do that.
Front, it's very wide.
I'm not going to do that.
So what do you mean?
I'm going to talk about the community that I live in. I'm not going to define what the modern Earth is like. I'm going to talk about the way I live here. Where we live now.
Do you find your community ranting and raving?
Yes.
Did they rant and rave?
Gentlemen, you're going to various different issues that we're going to be, Rata Shem, deal with. If possible, I want you to limit your answers to the following question. Are we different or are we the same?
From 200 years ago?
Yes.
Well, as you said, essentially many things are very similar. The fact that the means of communication changed, the clothing has changed, those are somewhat external. I'm not sure that's important.
Okay.
I don't think anything has changed.
Okay.
We once did a Rambam, how they were thinking about cutting out Chazar Sashat because it was too much talking.
Sure.
I think Jews have remained the same. But people rant and rave, not just Jews. I mean,
allow me to try to say what I'm saying, namely that nothing has changed, just the externals have changed, in the words of the Rambam that you've already just mentioned. The Rambam has a famous chapter in his Mishneh Torah called Yesodei HaTorah. Now, the Rambam was an halachic book, but he felt that part of halacha is not only to do certain things, but to think a certain way. In other words, Jewishness is not just something that tells you what to do with your hands or your feet. It also has what to do with your mind. And therefore, the Rambam thought it was important to begin his Mishneh Torah with various things that we would consider today as philosophy. But the Rambam, in my opinion, didn't see it as philosophy. He saw it as fundamentals of the way a Jew has to think and live. So think and live does not just mean what does he do with his hands, but rather think and live also has to do with what he does with his mind.
I think the great point of yours is that we may be much more assimilated.
Assimilated more. Could be. Says the Rambam in Perek 9, Chi'i, of Yichot Yesodei HaTorah, the fundamentals of Torah. Some Jews are very religious and say this after davening every day in the 13 Animamim. Animamim is Zot HaTorah Lo Tiyem Uchlefet, that this Torah will never change. Says the Rambam in Yichot Yesodei HaTorah, and this is the original of the Animamim, Davar Barur Mufurash. It's totally clear, totally coherent. There's nothing to talk about. And the minute you hear that, you understand that someone disagreed with him. If he's going to say Davar Barur Mufurash, it's so clear, obviously someone felt it wasn't clear. Shehi mitzvah omedet le'olam le'olmei olamim. This mitzvah is going to stand forever. En la lo shinoi ve'lo gira'om ve'lo tosefet. It doesn't change, you can't diminish from it, you can't add to it, and it ultimately is going to be the same. In other words, says the Rambam, that this mitzvah, meaning the Torah, does not change through the generations, it is eternal. You're not going to add to the Torah, you're not going to subtract from the Torah, the Torah remains the way it is static, and it always is going to be eternal. Nothing's going to change from it. You don't take out a law when you feel like it, and you don't add a law when you feel like it. Now, just in parentheses, I'll let you know that this particular, as I said earlier, obviously someone disagreed with. That's why the Rambam felt that Barbarash, not everyone agreed. One of the people that disagreed was the Sefer Ha'ikarim. The Sefer Ha'ikarim also brought what he believed was the fundamentals of our faith. Do you know what they were, by the way, according to the Sefer Ha'ikarim? He didn't have 13, he had 3. Malchuyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. Very interesting if we get close to Rosh Hashanah. But in the Sefer HaYikarim, he developed the point of view that the Torah can change. In other words, as time goes on, it will change. And he brought a very famous proof from a Haftorah that we read on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. You remember the Haftorah from Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? Not so often. You remember the Haftorah from last Shabbos? Don't answer. Do you remember the Haftorah from Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? Kol Amar Hashem HaShamayim Kisi V'Haaretz Adom Ragua. You remember? In that Haftorah at the end it says V'Haya Midei Chodesh V'Chodesho Midei Shabbat V'Shabbato. On every Rosh Chodesh and on every Shabbos Yavo Chol B'Tar Yishtachvot V'Fanecha. Every Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh we're going to come. Now, Pshat in the Pasuk, what does that mean? That on every Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, what are we going to go? The Beit HaMikdash. Now Bruce is looking at me and saying, Rabbi, how can that be? Why are you looking at me and saying, how can that be? Pardon? What?
There was no temple when they properly initiated.
No, there was a temple, but he's talking about the future. What's the question that screams out from this pasuk? The pasuk just says we're going to go to the temple every Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. We don't go every Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, but sharpen it. Did you ever find a mitzvah in the Torah to go to the temple every Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh? What's the mitzvah in the Torah? Shalosh. Te'amim. Bashana. 3 times a year. What Bruce calls the three regalim. They're called three regalim because you took your feet and you went to the Beit HaMikdash. So where does the Navi come off and say, oh, we're going to go every Rosh Chodesh, every single Shabbos? So says the Sefer HaYikarim, in the future, perhaps, we will go, that the Torah will change, no longer 3 times a year, many times a year.
Why does the Torah change rather than Rabbinic enactment?
What is Rabbinic enactment? It's a Pasuk in the Navi. He says, no, the Torah will change. It doesn't say Rabbinic enactment. Okay? And obviously many disagreed with him. Some wanted to agree with him and say, well, 3 times a year you have to go. The rest of the year, if you go, you get a kiyum mitzvah, but you don't have to do it. It's like wearing tzitzis today or shchita or any of those mitzvahs. But ultimately, the Sefer HaIkarim disagreed with the Rambam and says, yes, the Torah may change in the future. However, it seems very clear to me that the Jewish world, at least, has agreed with the Rambam. The Torah will not change. The Torah will remain the same. So if the Torah will remain the same, what are we doing? Are we part of the Torah world if we dress differently than our ancestors, if we talk differently, if our challenges are different? I want to introduce a term. And this term will, in my opinion, make you understand the way I believe we live. We didn't change the Torah one iota, in my opinion. The Torah remained the same. Applied it to the new reality. Just like, as you said earlier, it was applied 100 years ago and 200 years ago. The difference was not in the Torah. The difference was the way it was applied to the way we live, to the reality out there. Because what is the Torah if not a Torah Chaim, a living Torah? What do we say every Shabbos or every time we put back the Torah in the Aron Kodesh, in the Ark? Eich Chayim Hi. It is a Torah of life. There is no Torah without life, and there is no life without Torah. Once upon a time, there was Torah without life. When? Before the creation of the world, according to Chazal. Very good, Fred. Then the Torah was in Shemayim. Didn't have anything to do with life. God, for whatever reason, decided not to give it to angels. He gave it to human beings with all their frailties. So the minute that he gives it to human beings, we have to take this eternal book and apply it to each reality. The Torah doesn't change. The reality for sure changes. Allow me to give you a very simple analogy for you to understand it. A posek, a great decider of law. 3 poskim, 5 poskim, go into a room to paskin on a chicken. There's a problem with the chicken, I don't know, something not good there, the shofet calls in the poskim, they all come into the room. How do they come into the room? What are they holding under their arms? 5 different people, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and Yisachar, are coming into the room. What are they having under their arms? A Shulchan Aruch, perhaps a Chumash, Gemara. Okay, so let's say for Pete's sake, they have a Meseches Chulin, a Yoredeya, Shulchan Aruch, and a Chumash. And they all come in, they look at the same chicken. How many opinions are going to emanate from that particular constellation?
6, 5, or 10.
Very good. How come they all have the same books? They all have the same books. They all walked into the room with exactly the same books. You know what? The same. The Vilna Shas, this Shulchan Aruch, and that Chumash. How do they come out with different opinions? It's one chicken. Answer. The Torah didn't change. The books stayed the same. What changed?
Interpretation.
How you apply it, I like the word apply a little better than interpretation, how you apply it to the chicken standing in front of you. The reality changes. We don't live anymore in places in which there's no internet and there's no TV and what the world calls modernity. We live in a different reality. So we have to take the eternal Torah that we believe doesn't change, as the words of the Rambam, and apply it to the new reality and see how does the Torah relate to everything new out there. And this is true in two realms. First of all, the strictly technical physical realm. Let's think about this. How does the Torah relate to telephones? Can you call someone on Shabbos? Yes? No? I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu dealt with this question. Telephones. But you take the eternal Torah, the 39 melachos of Shabbos, and you take it and apply it to the telephone and see, is there a problem or not? Electricity. iPod. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have an opinion on iPods. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us an eternal Torah from God, and now we have to apply it to the iPod and to the telephone and to the electricity. On the other hand, we have to apply it to the seltzer machine too. Seltzer machine works mechanically, doesn't work electrically. And this is also true in a different realm, and that is in what we call Hashkafa. There's new things out there. What's the Torah view, in your opinion, on various things, be it the new state of Israel, be it the internet, the TV? I mean, these are not things that you could say there's an Isser involved, per se. These are things that you have to take the Torah and say, well, what do you think a Jew should do? The difference between the two would be, on the first realm, perhaps it would be a clear-cut answer. On the second realm, I can hear five different answers. There is such liberalism in Judaism. As a matter of fact, I believe that in Hashkafa, there is such, what's the term that we use today? The openness of views? Neil, give me the term. Pluralism when it comes to Hashkafa. But it's the same Torah. The difference is, how do you apply it to the new reality? So I want to today say one line and one line alone. I don't believe the modern or so-called modern Orthodox community changed anything. They applied the same Torah to the new reality. And when you apply things, obviously there's going to be difference of opinion. Obviously, not everyone's going to say the same thing. And obviously, we're not living the same way as our ancestors. Simply put, because of what? The reality has changed. We take the same Torah, the same books, and we apply it to the new reality.
Is there a deeper issue, though, that we have an issue of who's a Jew? The real question is, something like Jonathan, is who's a rabbi? Because if you take the census of, let's say, the Yeshivish adult, as they say, and the Daf Torah, quote, they'll say that you cannot do it. We then chose different rabbis who say you can. So the issue is not the application, it's the person who's
applying it for us. You bring up a very good point that I think we're going to have to deal with as to the place of rabbis in our world. What are they supposed to give an opinion about? What shouldn't they give an opinion about? And more importantly, us, the common folk, when do we have to listen to them and when don't we have to listen to them?
We don't even have a view of that story.
But
we don't even have a view of this sort of opinion.
Right.
The truth is that, in my opinion, the first and foremost fundamental of whatever world we live in, of our community, is two things. Number one, the Torah doesn't change, and we don't believe the Torah will change. Number two, its application obviously will change, not because the Torah changed, but because the reality has changed. And when the reality changes, we have to apply the eternal Torah to the new reality and see, what does the Torah have to say about the physical aspects of our life, be it the telephone and the iPod, and what I would call the spiritual hashkafic aspect of our lifetime. Is the state good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? Is the internet good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? That, in my opinion, is the first fundamental of our community. Not so much, God forbid, did we ever say that we changed. We didn't change. But ultimately, we apply to the new reality. Now I'm going to take it one step further, Bruce, before I hear your question, and say, I don't think we're living any differently. Your name again?
Menashe.
As Menashe said earlier, I don't think we're living any differently than 200 years ago. 200 years ago, the rabbis ramped and reigned about this, that, and the other thing, because there was a different reality. They didn't say anything about the internet because there was no internet. What do you want to say? Do you want to talk about something that doesn't exist? It's like talking about a child that wasn't born yet. How do you talk about a child that wasn't born yet? But ultimately, they did exactly what we do. They apply it to their reality. They apply with the same books to the new reality. That, in my opinion, the first fundamental of our faith, and therefore, we have to be totally aware of two things at all times. Number one, the reality, because if you live in a bubble, then you don't know what the reality is, and you don't know how to apply the Torah to the reality, and perhaps the Torah is detached, God forbid, from the reality, and you don't see any connection between them. And number two, what the Torah has to say. You have to learn Torah and understand what it says. And on the other hand, you have to learn the reality and see what it says. And then you see how this connects to that. Thus, there's a famous halacha that I love. Can you daven in a shul without windows? Anyone?
Yes, because I have.
In my Gemara, my edition, Sechus Brachos, Paskin LaHalacha, a shul has to have windows. Learned out from a pasuk in Daniel. Shul, lights, windows.
12
windows. Why windows? Why does the shul have to have windows? Isn't it better for your concentration not to have windows? Imagine you're davening here Shabbos, and here you are, you're in the middle of Musaf, and you don't have to look at what the Arabs are doing in all these fields around us. Isn't that better for our kavana? Why do you need to have windows? Answer, Judaism. For you to daven in the year 2011, you need to know what's happening out there. Because if not, what are you davening for? What are you davening for, this ideal society that doesn't exist? You're saying, Refa'enu Hashem v'nei Rafeh, heal the sick. Well, 200 years ago, when you said heal the sick, who were you talking about? God, please heal this person because nobody else is going to help him. The doctor wasn't a real doctor, Bichlal. The medicine wasn't real medicine, etc. When you say today, Refa'enu, with your windows and you're looking out in the reality, what is your kavana when you say that in Shmona Esrei? Put the wisdom and understanding and insight into the mind of the doctor to prescribe the right medicine that you, with your abundance and mercy, have given the world so that this person can be healed. Same pasuk, excuse me, same bracha, in the Shmona Esrei, totally different kavana today. Totally different kavana today. Re'eina va'onyenu, see our anguish. What's our anguish today in the year 2011? Let's make it even better. What's our anguish this Wednesday morning here in Efrat in the year 2011, getting closer to Rosh Hashanah in the month of Elul? No, what's the anguish today? Let's go around the table. When you said it this morning, what was the anguish? Let me give you a few ideas, okay? What's going to happen on September 23rd? That's anguish number one. Absolutely. A great rabbi once came to shul with a newspaper. They said, what are you coming to shul with a newspaper for? It's not appropriate. And he said, I ought to have to know what to daven for. I have to know what to daven for.
I knew you would have an iPad, right?
iPad. New. Correct. New. What else? Some Jews are terribly disturbed by the fact that they can't go to Turkey. I mean, Turkey is a very important part of our life, right? Turkish Airlines is a very cheap airline. People went there for vacations. They have business deals with Turkey. And maybe it's going to go down the drain because of the political situation. I don't know. Anguish. Reina v'onyenu, v'riva rivenu. Fight our wars for us. Do something. 200 years ago, you think they were thinking about Turkish Airlines on September 23rd? September 23rd was another day of the week. But a shul must have windows because you have to apply the reality to your Torah. If not, where are you living? You living in a bubble somewhere? In a bubble, it's wonderful. Rav Yochanan, excuse me, who was the man that lived in the bubble? Lived in the cave, 12 years? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. When he lived in his bubble, in the cave, during those 12 years, because he had no choice, they wanted to kill him, sure, that he had one request, and one request alone. What was his request? Get me out of here! That he wouldn't what? He didn't say that as far as I know. In the Gemara and Shabbat that talks about him going to the cave, it says that he came out of the cave, then he saw people working for a living and he got very upset.
Right. Well,
and he burned everything that he saw. And then, God said, go back into the cave. Then when he came out of the cave the second time, he saw a Jew taking two hadassim for Shamar v'Zachor, he understood you could connect Torah to life. And he was calm. I don't recall such a story from Chazal. Perhaps it's in other sources. I don't personally know the story.
Just,
yeah.
I'm sure. You know, in terms of taking a specific thing against you, it's somewhat of a, I think, a straw man argument that obviously didn't exist before. The real issue is, what is the rabbinic authority, which was different when you... And its interpretation of unrestricted information, particularly for children. And that's a question.
I don't understand what you just said. What's the rabbinic authority? I understood. What was the second clause?
What's our relationship to unrestricted information?
What's our relationship to unrestricted?
Should we allow ourselves to let in?
Oh, okay. Okay. Now I understand. We're going
to
deal with that, God.
It is an old question, but certainly our community has looked at it definitely differently than it was before. But since we don't really have a bit of authority anymore, the way we used to, every man does what under his own picture.
I don't think you're right. I don't agree with you at all.
Well, I
think we do have a rabbinic authority today. Obviously, perhaps it's less or more, not so much in the realm of halacha, but in other ones.
When a rabbi says, this is my opinion, people say, so.
Again,
say that in Beitar,
we're going to deal with what we call Da'at Torah, the Aguda world, the rabbinic world, whatever, we're going to deal with that. But I am going to say that rabbinic authority does not mean that everything a rabbi says you have to do.
No, there's nothing the rabbi.
And I say that as a rabbi.
There's nothing the rabbi and the president of people need to have to do.
It depends on what issue. It depends on what issue.
Anyone will say, okay, I must follow the rabbi.
Excuse me, I disagree. I think even in our community, if a rabbi says there were certain fruits and vegetables at the store, and they weren't monsters taken from it, so please don't eat it. I'm pretty sure that 90% are not going
to
eat
it.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that 90% won't eat it. They'll look into it, but they'll come to the same conclusion.
On your next trip to Newark Airport.
We will deal with that, too. We will deal with that, too. But today, for this case of this particular year, I just wanted to say two fundamentals. Number one, the Torah does not change. Number two, its application obviously will change because reality changes. And number three, if God forbid we detach Torah from reality, the Torah ceases to be a Torah of life. The Torah becomes this nice, historic document that perhaps you'd like to learn, you'd like to develop in, just like many other prehistoric or realities and documents and lifestyles that once existed. If we believe the Torah is a Torah of life, we have to apply it to the reality out there. And the questions you brought up, Bruce, rabbinic authority, how much do you listen to rabbis today and all that, have to be dealt with within this discussion, simply because if we believe the Torah has to do with life, then ultimately we better deal with life. And part of life is
from a technology,
all that.
The issue isn't technology, the issue is what's our relationship to information, should be restricted in some fashion or not.
I think, first of all, I think it's both. It's both of what's our relationship to technology, and second of all, what's our relationship to unrestricted information and many other things. Absolutely.
I think 20 years ago, but I think our answer to that question is different than it was years ago. This is because there is a diminution of rabbinic authority.
No. See, what you're doing now is you're giving an interpretation as to why our answer is different. And the interpretation you're giving is because we no longer listen to rabbis. And if rabbis, we listen to rabbis, then we live the same way.
No, my answer is absolutely not.
I think that 1,200 years ago there was a difference of opinions within rabbis on various issues. That then was the reality, and today will be exactly the same thing.
Do you have a better example of something that changed in halacha over time? The application changed?
The application changed?
It's just a different, it's the same.
A different kavana.
It's a different kavana, but it's the same idea. The idea hasn't changed. It's just
Absolutely. I'll give you one very simple example. Let's go right from the beginning. If you learn Shulchan Aruch, like from the beginning, the first siman there, right? Shaviti Hashem when Negdi Tamid, all the beautiful things you're supposed to think about in the morning and all that. You remember that? Okay. What does the Shulchan Aruch say you're supposed to get up in the morning?
The 16th century.
This is not ancient history. No? When?
Or something?
Yeah. You have to get up like a lion. When are you supposed to get up in the morning?
Alot
HaShachar.
Back
of dawn. Alot HaShachar. Ira HaShachar. He quotes a pasuk. Anyone here get up at the day of the Alot HaShachar besides the Spartan that began Slichas?
But Nate is so valuable.
Yeah, I'm going to work.
Fred's the exception, I believe. But once upon a time, I am going to submit that if you live in the 16th century, like the Beis Yosef, like the Shulchan Aruch, and you lived in either where he came from, in Spain, and then eventually in Tzfat, and you got up after Alot HaShachar, you were considered a lazy bum. Why? Because when did people go to sleep at night without electricity?
When it got dark.
When it got dark, about an hour later, when the candles went out, good night. When did they get up? When it got light. Before it got light, a little before it got light, how much could a Jew sleep at night? 7-8 hours, finished. He was up.
Well, the Arabs still get up early.
Yeah. By the way, that proves my point. The Arabs did not change the way they lived because they clothed themselves from reality. You ever see the way the Arabs go and thresh their fields? They thresh their fields like they did in the time of the Mishnah.
You can't say that it's a Jewish value.
We create the reality.
We didn't create the reality. The Shulchan Aruch was talking.
There's no rabbi that would tell you dominant at 8 o'clock Shach
Nate. There'll be many rabbis that will say it. Nate is considered a hidur. It's not considered a halacha.
What's 8 o'clock? 8 o'clock is nothing. It's not a hiddur, it's not
the
a
halacha hiddur. Is that you're supposed to daven before Kriyat Shema, Zman Kriyat Shema preferably, Zman Tzila. Those things did not change. Now, when should you get up in the morning? I think that absolutely changed because there's a new reality for the electricity. Yeah.
No, I don't buy that.
When people want to beat the traffic or they need to get into the city,
there are many, many, many religious businessmen that get up at the traffic.
But you're proving my point. Why are they getting up? Not because it's the right time to get up, but because why? You said it.
When you look at different halachot that were given back then and you want to see if they're applicable for today, you have to understand the reason why they were given then. And nobody can really tell you the exact reason why the Shukhara told you to wake up at night. You're assuming that because you have electricity and nothing ever holds up.
I'm not assuming. First of all, I don't know the reasons. Second of all, I also can't assume what he said. I didn't ask him. Sure that. All I can tell you is that today there isn't a rabbi I know alive that will tell people follow the Shulchan Aruch and get up at Alot HaShachar.
Okay,
especially not in the summer. What? Maybe yes, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know what the Torah basis is. The Shulchan Aruch brings the halacha in his book of halachas, quotes a pasuk Ira Shachar, which is not, as you know, from the five books of the Torah, and that's what he says to do.
But could you go to a Torah law? Like you use the idea of...
As I said, I believe in the Rambam, the Torah law does not change.
No, but you use the idea of the Sharash Regalim, that there are three Regalim, and then
correct.
You said a change with the...
No, it doesn't change.
The
Tekwa Yisharim said it's going to change, but
right.
Others disagree.
But now you need an example that's based in the Torah, words in the Torah that we've applied differently throughout
absolutely.
Ages.
Let me give you a halacha. How are you supposed to dress for davening? That's absolutely within the Gemara. I'm not so sure it's not a Torah law how you're supposed to dress for davening. Three times a day davening is the Rabbanan, according to all.
Right.
Once a day, perhaps, is all right, according to the Rambam. So once a day, there's a dress code for that. So when the Gemara deals with the dress code for davening, I'm not sure it's talking about the Rabbanan davening. We're talking about davening in general. Anytime you daven and you're standing before God, it could be the once a day, not the three times a day. How you're supposed to dress. The Gemara says, like you do before a king. Remember the Gemara? He called me Krat Melachecha Yisrael. Beautiful halacha. It's
again, it's not a Torah. It's not a Torah.
I disagree. I think perhaps it is a Torah law, how you're supposed to dress for davening.
But it's not written there. It's not an application of something that's written in the Torah.
You want a halacha that's written in the Torah, how we apply it today?
How we've applied it differently in the past, that we applied differently today. Something that's
okay.
Listen, it's not applied differently. It's just not done.
No, that's not true. That's not true. That's a great example. That's a great example. Thank you. Even better than what I was thinking of. And this week's Parsha, then. So we'll learn a little Parsha here. All right, David. You have to change this year. It's a Parsha, Hashkafa, Halacha. All right, let's go. This week's Parsha talks about Yibum and Chalitza. Read the Psukim in this week's Parsha. What are you supposed to do, preferably? In the Psukim.
Yibum.
So how come today, at least the Ashkenazi community, through many generations, preferred Chalitza.
The
Torah gives the option.
The Torah gives
Chalitza.
The option of Chalitza.
Yes, it gives the option.
So we don't change.
But
the
there's a lechatchila in the Torah. There's a lechatchila the Oraisa that it says to do Yibum. The Torah says do Yibum. It doesn't say you can do either or. It says do Yibum, and if they don't want to do Yibum for whatever reason, then you do Chalitza. That's the way the Torah puts it in this week's Parsha.
Right.
Why?
The rabbis
why?
Had a lot of adrenaline.
No, why?
They felt it wasn't, we weren't on the level to do even properly.
Correct.
So they banned it.
First of all, I have to say, in all honesty, today to have a chalitza case even is very rare because the reality is we live longer. If we live longer, the probability that someone's going to die without a son and et cetera is very low.
Mean, soldiers.
Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm saying that the reality is such that people live longer lives, thank God. Now, accordingly, why did it change? Because reality changed. People weren't using Yibum the way they should. And therefore, the rabbi said, even though the Torah says l'chatchila yibum, and sort of b'dievet chalitza, we're going to perform the chalitza.
How do they have the right to do it if they can't change it?
Because it's the option, and they applied
it
to the new reality.
It's really an option.
It absolutely is an option.
Yibum,
Bruce, did you read the psukim in this week's parsha? Is chalitza written in there?
No, but you just said.
Bishalaf ishna lo, it's right in there.
Yibum is the choice.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You can't do it.
And came along, and this proves my point, that came along the rabbis and said, we have to apply this law to the new reality. The new reality is that men are not using this law in the proper way. So we're going to prefer the second option within the Torah. Not outside the Torah, but within the Torah. That's a very good example. That's an excellent example. They didn't change anything. They just preferred one over the other.
But the Torah doesn't give them that preference. It doesn't say if you prefer one or the other.
Yes, it does. It does.
No, it says if you can't do Yibum.
No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. It does not say that.
It's really meant if rabbis could say, well...
If the man does not want to do Yibum, it says, then you do Chalitza.
The man doesn't want to. Someone told him you can't do it.
All right, but the Torah comes up, and then the rabbis come along and say, these two options are written in the Torah. The Torah is saying this is the preferable way. We're changing it.
Because
there is an option, but they're negating the option.
There you go.
You have to do Khalid.
That's
right.
There
is no option anymore. Which is
that's right.
And the
Torah that's
gave
right.
it the option. And
the Torah gave it the option. But how you apply one over the other is exactly something that the rabbis have to apply to the new reality, and the new reality is such. Give you another example. Find me a pasuk in the Torah that says you can't marry two wives.
So that's only the Rabbanan, that's Gezerah.
I want to be very careful with the word Gezerah and Takana. These are two different things. Gezerahs are part of the Torah in the sense of that the Torah says that you have to sometimes make a Gezerah so that they won't violate a biblical law. So if on Shabbos you're allowed to write one letter but not two letters, came along the rabbis and said to me, the Rabbanan, not even one letter. Right? That's a Gezerah. Gezerah is what I like to call Frumkeit. A Takana is not Frumkeit. As a matter of fact, it has nothing to do with Frumkeit. It has to do with the social welfare of the Jewish people. One of quoted is Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom, which again, according to the Torah, there's no problem with marrying two, three, four, five wives. Absolutely no problem.
No obligation.
No obligation, but no problem. Came along the rabbis and said, no more, bigamy is out. Now, today in Israel, by the way, that was accepted in the Ashkenazi community, not in the Sephardi community, up until recently.
Doesn't it have a life of 1,000 years, which expired?
Whatever, 1,000 years, sure. 200 years, a big machlekes. It makes no difference to us in Israel because in 1950 the Beis Din in Israel came out and said in Israel we're making a takana, not a gzeira, because gzeira wise, frumkeit, you should marry 10 wives after the Holocaust. I heard this from Rabbi Kefid many times. You want a lot of children, you want to make up?
I think it would solve a lot.
Yeah, could be.
It would solve a lot of problems.
There you go with the applying the Torah to the new reality. We do not live like we don't live like they did with two, three, four wives, which are reading Tanakh all over the place, because the reality has changed. And today, in this world, I believe that the Torah being applied, its ideals of what marriage is, what love is, etc., you can only have one wife. Now, you can disagree on my interpretation to Chalitza and to two wives, but I can go on with examples. There's no denying the fact that we live differently. The question is, why? So I say, because we applied the ancient Torah to the new reality and we came up to this conclusion. You can say, maybe not. Let's hear another interpretation.
No, I agree. I think it's just when it comes to actually applying it to reality, we're only going to find examples of Kula. Because to bring a Kula, like a real Kula, to actually change something that used to be applied differently and make it applied in a more lenient way today, You have to be saying, I understand why they did it 2,000 years ago, and I know for sure that reason doesn't exist anymore. And I don't think
you have to do
that. You can't be 100% sure that the only reason that there was some kind of ether was one thing, and it doesn't exist today. Maybe there were other reasons we don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
That's why I think it's really hard to see.
Allow me to say two things. Allow me to say two things on what you said. Number one is that I do believe there are examples where we do Lekula, and one of them that just screams out in my mind is Shmitat Kesafim. You know anyone today that's Mekayim the Halakha of Shmitat Kesafim? That means at the end of the 7th year, all your debts are canceled, you don't ask for the money back, someone owes you money, done, finished.
You get principle that you have back
principle was instituted, you know,
by Hillel. So Hillel changed, came along, and Prusbult, our life, so that whole took him in the Torah. We can read it, we can learn it. Doesn't apply. We just sign a Prusbult.
Look, I
that's what Kula. Number two is, I just want to say also, I don't believe Halakha requires us to rely on a precedent at all. In other words, when the Torah says, Asher v'yabata l'akohen v'la shofet asher yeh bayamim ahim, it's basically telling us you go to the rabbis in that generation who see that reality. You don't have to justify what the Chassam Sofer said differently, so how dare I come along and say something else. I don't think that's part of the halakhic psak system. And number three, I personally am a little uncomfortable with, but we're going back to a machlokas rishonim. Are there reasons for mitzvot or not? If the Torah doesn't give the reasons, can we apply reasons to the mitzvot?
I'm saying the reasons that it was applied the way back then.
So I think all we have to do is to explain why we think this has to be applied in our generation this way. I don't think we have to go a step further and say, well, why are we different from them? We have to explain the Torah in our generation. That's what I believe is what our job is. We have to be genuine to explain the Torah to our generation.
Is that what we're just through the minds of the Christians today? Like, are they comfortable with just saying, well, today it's like this, so we can do it with it. I can assume that they especially when they have an added pula to.
Well, it depends who you're talking about. Now I'm going to be very blunt. If you're talking about a posek, what I call a posek, meaning someone like Rav Moshe Feinstein, that doesn't just tell you what to do, but in his Igros Moshe, he actually formed a reality. He said, this is the way I think the reality should be, or this is what I believe the Jewish people should do, then I absolute this generation. You go to the Shulchan Aruch and whatnot. A real posek, that. If you're talking about a more hora'ah, what's called today a more hora'ah, then all he does is he connects you with the Seif Katan and the Mishnah Berurah. He doesn't form a reality. The nafkamina between a posek and a more hora'ah is, do they write a sefer that we call a shut, shevos and tshuvos, or don't they? If you look in the shevos and tshuvos, you will never, or very rarely, find a question and answer that's two lines. What do you find? A whole discussion in which the posek brings his point of view of how to connect the Torah to the reality. Not just do this or do that. That's like what we look for. We look for the end, right? Look, Rav Avadi Yosef writes five lines of Bechen Katav, Bechen Katav, Bechen. We just want to know, what does he say? Right? That's the way we are. There's a book that came out called Piskei Tshuvos. You know the book? It's on all the Mishnah Berurah. Take the whole Mishnah Berurah, and it writes Piskei Tshuvos on all these things. It just brings the last line. Right? That's not what the posek wanted to do. He wanted to shoot. I know of Moshe Feinstein once that took basically a Igros Moshe and wrote the bottom line on each tshuva and wanted to put it out as a book. He told his people in Israel to sue that person because that's not what he wanted. He wanted to explain how he believes the Torah should apply to the reality. If you're talking about a Mora Hara, on the other hand, I believe they're not poskim. Therefore, they have less authority, at least in their own minds. Their shoulders are a little smaller. And ultimately, they don't necessarily sit around and say, this is the way I think the Torah should be applied to the reality. They come along and start saying, well, how am I different from the Chosim Sofer? Maybe what? Those questions come up. But a posek like Moshe Feinstein, Nachum Rabinovich, Rabbi Yosef, I don't think deals with those questions.
But I really see this as something different, because I think when it comes to halacha, halacha really doesn't change. It's the peripheral, cultural Jewish that changes. If you look, for instance, at Rabbi Soloveitcher, and you take a look at what he didn't possibly write a Shabbos and Shuvah, but if you look at how he passed in halacha, he was 90% more machmir many times than other posts. And we don't follow him necessarily. So within the realm of halacha, modern orthodoxy...
Not always. Not
modern
always.
Orthodoxy could be just as machmir in halacha, but when it comes to the externals of how you dress, which is a relative thing, how you act, things like that, that has changed.
Okay, that's exactly what I'm saying.
It's not a question of the Torah changing.
First of all, I have to disagree with you on Rav Soloveitchik. I don't think he was only machmir 90%. I really don't. I think that he was like any other posek. He was pretty balanced. Depends on what issue.
Yeah, but
even on Hilchos Shabbos.
Think in the outside world, Rav Soloveitchik, he's a maker.
No, he wasn't a maker. Neither was Moshe Feinstein a maker. He was a balanced posek. And Rav Avadi Yosef, I disagree with the point of view that he's always a maker. On certain issues, he's a maker. On certain issues, he's a big machmir. Go ask Rav Avadia Yosef, can you make shlichos in the morning at 7:10? He'd bite your head off. He'd say, you're a choyter and a machti, forget about it. He'd go crazy. The same with Avadia Yosef. Rav Avadia Yosef would take your berakas out of your refrigerator and put it on the pot and finished. Oh, hachzara, shehiyah, nothing, pot is good, finished. Same with Avadia Yosef. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think the same way. He was a balanced posek on certain issues. He went ballistic and said, totally and utterly no. Look at Gear. Here and there, there's a heter. And Gear is not a good example because I think at times he found a heter for it and he didn't like. But Tachlis, his point of view was very machmir, like Rav Kook, two people that you would say, oh, they're makers, right? On the other hand, on other issues, Rav Moshe was extremely makers. Extremely makers. More than anyone. Chidushim beyond belief. Rav Soloveitchik came along and said, you can brush your teeth on Shabbos with toothpaste. Right? Today, if you say that in the Haredi world, they think your mom is chayav skila. Right?
It depends where you're coming from. Depends which side you're looking at these things from. If you're looking from the yeshiva world, they're going to say
yeah.
If you're looking at it from the...
He did not use a klisheni.
Right?
He didn't use a klishlishi for tea. He made it a klisheni. And on the other hand, he had big chumers on Hilchos Shabbos. He didn't fold his talus after davening.
There's a story in the Nefesh Arav about how a person used to come to a shir and he's got to walk a distance.
So he didn't wear a suit.
He needs to leave his jacket and shoe from Shabbos, so you can't do that. If you're walking in the street on Shabbos,
yeah,
you have to wear
that a suit. That obligates me today. I feel very bad. I feel very hot to me. I think the story is correct, halachically. Yeah. Shabbos and shul, not a plant, does it make sense?
Last year, they were complaining about their vegans, everybody had to wear a jacket and hat when they davened. If the room was freezing cold, they spent a ton of money on air conditioning to make the room cold enough so people would daven comfortably with the jacket and hat on. So I said that, you know, you save a little money if you make a heter, you don't have to daven with a jacket and have to turn it to save a little money on the air conditioning.
They also have in the state, everybody wears a jacket on Shabbos. Most people wear a jacket on Shabbos.
Well,
come Sunday, in the States, though, most people wear a jacket on Shabbos. But then on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, where's the...
That's a good example of application, by the way, because the Gemara says that we're supposed to come before God like Shulchan Aruch. Each person does come differently before a king in each reality that they live in. If you're a rabbi, in my opinion, you wear a suit and tie, so you have to wear a suit and tie to davening. On the other hand, in Israel, I'm not so sure that if a kibbutznik had a Rosh HaMemshalah comes visit,
right,
he'd wear long pants.
Right,
and a kid
makes
you wear, you'd probably wear short pants. You'd probably wear short pants that weren't ripped. Right? You wouldn't wear a t-shirt. Maybe you wear a two-button shirt. But that's the way you come before a king. So
right,
on Shabbos and other days of the week, that would apply. You have to uplift a little bit, but it wouldn't be to a suit and tie. Now,
right,
that halacha in and of itself is a great example of how we apply the halacha differently to different realities.
But why the disconnect between Shabbos and Sunday?
No, I can't explain. You ask me to explain them
everywhere, even in Israel. People wear different dress on
first
Shabbos.
Of all, you're supposed to make, you're supposed to wear different clothes for Shabbos than during the week. You're supposed to wear nicer clothes on Shabbos.
They wear the black shoes on Shabbos. They wear the white shoes on Shabbos.
You know, you absolutely have to wear different clothes
right,
on Shabbos.
Such a difference
now, how do you dress for davening all week is a function of that particular week. How would you come before the king that week? Well, you visited his house. How would you come before him? So if your answer is suit and tie, that's the way you have to wear for davening. If your answer is a shirt and pants, that's what you wear for davening. I know many good Jews, and I respect them greatly because I believe they're correct, that they're on a tiyul somewhere, they have a tikk, in the tikk they have water, because in Israel you can get dehydrated even before you breathe, and they have their whatever they have in there, and they have a pair of pants. Right, they have a pair of pants. But if you go in July, August to a tiyul in Israel, anywhere in the world, in Israel, then ultimately you probably find a minion in the middle of nowhere, right? So how do you daven before God with shorts? No, they got their pair of pants. Put on their pants. If the Rosh HaMemshalah would come now, I put on a pair of pants in his honor. That's great. I have no problem with that. What I have a problem is a guy who, if he would go visit the president, he'd wear a suit and tie. But when he does, when the president doesn't come to shul, and he's in shul before God, he doesn't wear a suit and tie. That's the problem, halakhically.
Like go visit the president,
Yeah, I know, not this president.
Are women different?
Huh?
Are the women different?
I don't like the way, I think that the Torah doesn't change, how we apply it would be differently based on the social reality of the Jewish people at that time.
That's a
great example.
Because
absolutely.
Educating women has changed.
Oh, yes. Yes. There is a great example where the Mishnah seems to say, according to the Tanakhama, that you're not allowed to teach your daughter, it's a better idea not to teach her Torah. And there's one view that says it's okay. And ultimately, the Rambam paskins for halacha, a woman that learns Torah has sachar, but not like a man because she's not obligated, but it's better not to teach. And today, I don't know any posuk that would say that. From Beis Yaakov onward. Anywhere. Each one applies it differently. Only Torah Shabbistav, a little Torah Shabbalpeh, maybe Mishnah, no Gemara, Poiskim, Shas. Fine, but no one would say that today.